You're listening to a podcast from the Brookings Institution.
There's nothing constitutional about the filibuster. There's nothing original to the Senate about the filibuster. If anything, we think its origins are in a mistake, in a quirky cleaning of the rule book back in 1806. And once the key rule was gone that allowed majorities to cut off debate, impossible for majorities to cut off debate.
This is At Brookings, a weekly in-depth look at the issues behind the news. This week, the filibuster.
For more than 200 years, the U.S. Senate has used the filibuster to extend debate and to stall action on red-hot legislation. Critics say it can be divisive, that it widens the partisan divide, and that it can hamper the business of the people. Recently, votes on health care reform and unemployment benefits were prolonged by filibustering. Governance Studies senior fellow Sarah Binder says, despite its reputation, the filibuster has a place in the legislative process.
Sarah, one of the key tools in the Senate's toolbox is the filibuster. Tell me what the filibuster is and what it does essentially.
The filibuster is basically extended debate. And because the Senate doesn't have a rule that allows a majority to cut off debate, right, the rules of the Senate really allow a single senator or a large group of senators to keep talking, to offer amendments, to hold the floor until they crumble or until the majority gets 60 votes to cut them off. Minority party members, as well as members of the majority, they all think the filibuster is very useful, and they use it for all different purposes. Oftentimes, it is sort of this classic view of the filibuster to block legislation from going forward. And that's certainly how the minority has used the filibuster to block all sorts of issues over the last decade and decades. Other times, minorities use the filibuster, though, to try to slow down the majority, to try to get them to adopt their amendments or to change their views and to force them to compromise. It can also simply force the public to pay attention to what the minority party is saying or to what individual senators are saying. So think about Senator Jim Bunning, who single-handedly blocked extension of unemployment benefits. Well, turns out it wasn't such a popular position even amongst Republicans, but it stopped the Senate, and it took everybody's attention to really a substantive argument that Bunning was making about how we're going to pay for these types of benefits.
So the filibuster can be effective.
Well, it's effective from senators' points of view, and certainly from senators in the opposition party. From the majority party's perspective, for decades, if not centuries, right, it's a headache. Right? In a way that makes the Senate oftentimes ungovernable if we think that majority should have the capacity to rule in a legislative body. Granted, that's, some people contest that view.
How does the filibuster affect partisanship in the Senate?
It exacerbates partisanship because oftentimes it crystallizes over a cloture vote. Will the majority party get 60 votes? And oftentimes these cloture votes become partisan in themselves because they are about the majority's ability to govern the chamber. They're not always about policy, right? They are, in essence, procedure votes, and there's a lot of pressure to line up behind your party on a cloture vote.
There's a question about the constitutionality of the filibuster. Is it a constitutional thing or something that just sort of evolved in the Senate?
So we shouldn't say that we can't touch the filibuster because it's constitutional or it's endemic or it's integral to the history of the Senate. It's not. I really think it was a procedural accident. But once it takes root in the Senate, it's very, very hard to get rid of it, even though majorities have tried to reform it over the decades. Majorities have at times succeeded in reforming the filibuster. There was, in fact, quite the origins of the cloture rule, 1917, over the U.S. entry into World War I, where Woodrow Wilson, the president, made it a public issue and said filibustering is harming the United States' national security. So there are episodes where public attention can be harnessed to get senators to change the rules, but those episodes are really few and far between. So it's very hard to do away with a 60-vote threshold.
Sarah, what's the constitutional option, and how does it factor into the workings of the filibuster?
The constitutional option is really an argument that the Senate, at the opening of a Congress, could change its cutoff debate on a rule change by majority vote. In other words, in essence, to say that the normal Rule 22 supermajority 60-vote rule doesn't apply at the beginning of a Congress. That's somewhat controversial in the Senate. There's precedent for it, but there's precedent the other way as well. But that would be the one opening for reformers to say, look, we don't have the requisite supermajority to change the rules, cut off a filibuster of a rule change, but let's do it by the constitutional option. I don't really see 51 Democratic votes to do that come January, but it's always an option.
How will the midterm elections affect the power of the filibuster?
Republicans haven't really been able to use it to block legislation because there's so many Democrats. But after the election, if we're down to 53 Democrats, 54 Democrats, I have no doubt there'll be many, many uses of the filibuster in ways that actually are successful from the minority's perspective, that block legislation altogether. And that's going to re-raise the question about, is the Senate broken and does it need change?
Sarah, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being with us. We hope to see you again next week. I'm Gigi Hinton.
At Brookings is produced by the Brookings Institution. To learn more about the issues discussed on At Brookings, visit our website at brookings.edu.